Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 283 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her own mathematics. What? What are you talking about? I hope you're saying that to yourself. This is going to be amazing, because I don't think you've ever heard an interview like this before. So I'm so excited about the interview, the episode, and the guest. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I just love to get your feedback. Okay, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
So I'm trolling along the Wall Street Journal, and I always look forward to that column by Dr. Eugenia Cheng. And who is she? Well, here we go. She is a mathematician, educator, author, public speaker, columnist, concert pianist, and artist. I'm exhausted already. She's also the author of the brand new book, X Plus Y, a mathematician's manifesto for rethinking gender. Now, I know a lot of you are probably saying, oh my God, math, such a nightmare, you know, experience when you were in school. Now stop, relax, take a deep breath. This is going to be pretty amazing. Dr. Cheng is scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And she won tenure in pure mathematics at the University of Sheffield in the UK, and is now honorary visiting fellow at City University of London. I could go on forever. She is also the author of other top-level national bestsellers, How to Bake Pie, it's a little mathematical joke, Beyond Infinity, and The Art of Logic in an Illogical World. She lives in Chicago. Now, this book is crazy good, and it took me back to the Wall Street Journal article that she wrote, which was called What the Numbers Say About Gender Differences. Data on Abilities Reveal a Great Deal of Overlap for Men and Women. Dr. Cheng, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. I was just doing the little happy dance. I couldn't wait. My team is crazy about your book and where you're coming from, and they've learned so much already. In the beginning of your book, you write, being a woman means many things. Many of those things really have nothing to do with being a woman. They are contrived, invented, imposed, conditioned, unnecessary, obstructive, damaging, and the effects are felt by everyone, not just women. How can mathematical thinking help? Why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because I wanted to help. And I believe that I can help, and that I have a way of thinking about these things that nobody's really talked about before. And it all comes from the fact that I believe that mathematics is about thinking clearly. And I know that many people have bad experiences from school or were put off because it was all about getting the right answer and churning your way through tons and tons of equations trying to get the right answer, and maybe not being able to do it fast enough or not being able to memorize a formula or things like that. And so many people are put off by that aspect of math. But for me, that's really not what math is about. Math is about using logic the powerful tool of logic and the amazing discipline of abstraction to strip away irrelevant details and get to the heart of what is making a situation really happen. And although math is usually applied to things like science and engineering and medicine, really we can use it to think through any thorny situation that is surrounded by distractions, and gender is certainly one of those.
I love it. I mean, when I read this, your column, I mean, I love all of your columns because, you know, I'm one of those strange persons who actually, I'm a graduate of Berkeley before I went to medical school, and I actually made it all the way through advanced calculus until I fell off my chair. I was like, oh my God, this is starting to get a little hairy in here. And honestly, seriously, you know, I had this funny little joke with myself when I was at Berkeley, because obviously I was pre-med, and I had already way done all my math requirements, but I just kept going because I kind of loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it until I was the only woman in the room.
Yeah.
Now, you know that feeling, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do know that feeling.
Okay.
And that's a real
well.
A
no
real
one
shame.
Would help me. Well, right. No one would help me.
Right.
So suddenly, I was all by myself, mm-hmm. and all the guys subsectored into their little cliques, and I was just sitting there. And mm-hmm. let's just say the teacher wasn't exactly empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here you are. You know, you noted again in your introduction. How can mathematical thinking help? As I am a woman in the male-dominated field of mathematics, I am often asked about issues of gender. What's it like being so outnumbered? What I think of supposed gender differences in ability, what I think we should do about gender imbalances, how can we find other role models? And then you said for a long time you weren't interested in those questions, but then you are. So why did you start pivoting to being interested in those questions?
Well, the reason, the answer to that is really in why I wasn't interested before. And it's because I suppressed any interest in that, because I felt like I had to in order to succeed in that environment. I felt like I had to suppress all aspects of femininity in order to be successful. And I did, and I was successful. And then finally, when I felt secure in my tenured job, I felt free to think about things more, and I felt like I wanted to get in touch with my femininity. And that's when I discovered that I didn't seem to make that compatible with my job. It just didn't seem to go together. And that's when I started thinking about moving away to this much more unusual kind of career where I do many different things, really focused on helping people. And eventually I realized that my narrative didn't even make any sense, because what does it even mean to suppress your femininity or get in touch with your femininity? I am a female person, so everything I do is feminine. And somehow we have associated characters and behaviors with gender in a way that doesn't make any sense. And likewise, masculinity doesn't make sense, because if a man does something, then it's masculine because he's a man. Whereas we associate gender to types of behavior. And then if a woman does something that we claim is masculine, it sounds like she's done something wrong. And if a man does something that we claim is feminine, it sounds like he's done something wrong. And only when I stepped away from all that traditional framework for a while did I realize that none of that makes sense. And worse, it's getting in the way. It's really getting in the way of our thinking and getting in the way of progress and equality and inclusivity of everybody. And that's why I wanted to come up with a theory that would help us escape.
So what's our theory?
Well,
explain
my theory,
your theory.
The theory for me is that the gender, thinking about everything in terms of gender, is one-dimensional. And that's a trap that we're stuck in. And in mathematics, to get out of a one-dimensional situation, you move into a higher dimension. Now, I am a higher dimensional mathematician, and so I like thinking in higher dimensions. But the reason I like thinking in higher dimensions is because we get more nuance. Thinking in lower dimensions is easier, And goodness knows we need to make the world easier to understand it because it's very complicated. But if we make it too easy, then we've oversimplified. And what we need to do is become a bit more intelligent so that we can understand the nuances. So I propose to, this is what I did in my book, the main thesis is that we need to separate character from gender. They're separate dimensions. Gender is important, and we don't, I'm not saying that we should ignore it, because there are situations where unfairness and imbalance comes from direct gender prejudice, and we still need to deal with that directly. But a lot of the time, it's about character, and we shouldn't associate that with gender, but we should just think about it in its own right. And so I proposed new terminology to describe different types of character and behavior. And I believe that this helps us think more clearly by getting out of that one-dimensional trap.
Give us an example of this new terminology.
So my new terminology is that there are two words. There's ingressive and congressive. And I tried to come up with words that sounded like they had some etymological sense. So ingressive is about going into things, and congressive is about bringing things together, bringing people together, bringing situations together, and caring about people around you. So I characterize ingressive behavior as individualistic, thinking about yourself, and congressive behavior is about taking into account the community and people around you and being collaborative and bringing people together. And so I think that ingressive behavior is things like being very self-confident and not worrying what other people think. And congressive behavior involves worrying what people think and taking their suggestions on board and caring about people around you. And ingressive behavior is things like where you only think that you think that you are an individual and you don't take into account that we're all connected as part of a society. And I think this is like people who think that they are a self-made millionaire, not taking into account that they are part of a society and the structures of that society were part of what enabled them to make money. Nobody makes money in complete isolation, distinct from everyone around them. And so I think that a more congressive approach is to acknowledge all the help that you received. For example, I acknowledge all the help and support that I have received to help me get to where I am now. And although I also think I worked very hard, I know I couldn't have done it without that support. And it makes me want to provide that support to other people so that they can succeed too.
Ah, so congressive. To say the least. I love those two terms, by the way. Just amazing. And when I was reading the book, when I came across the chapter on leaning in and then, of course, leaning out, I loved that. And I want you to share your thoughts about the problem with leaning in.
Right. When we're stuck in the one-dimensional gender trap, we're stuck thinking things like, men are more successful than women, and then we try and understand why. And some people think it's because men have certain characteristics and they do behave in certain ways that makes them more successful. And so then we often tell women that they need to do those things too in order to be successful. And so I've participated in many, and I'm sure you have as well, participated in many kind of role model events where young women are brought together and some more senior experienced women is brought along to give them advice. And so often the other people on the advice tell all the women in the room, it's really important to be self-confident, to take risks, to get out of your comfort zone. And I always think that isn't necessarily the case. We're making assumptions that men are successful because of those character types. But the thing is that society has been rewarding ingressive behavior for a really long time. And There's no good reason for that, I think. Once we've disassociated those character types from gender, I think we can think more clearly and take a step back and go, wait, actually, why are we rewarding ingressive behavior when congressive behavior is better for all of us? Why don't we reward congressive behavior instead? For example, I would much rather work with someone who lacks self-confidence because they're aware of their shortcomings and want to try and be better, as opposed to someone who is so confident in their own abilities that they don't stop to wonder if they're wrong, they don't try to improve, they don't check their work, they don't test their theories.
You know,
the kind of people I'm thinking of.
I love it. And so, you know, as I'm reading this, I'm also seeing that you have proposed how to look at ungendered thinking. Explain what that is.
That is where, instead of thinking about masculinity and femininity and whether men are better at things or whether women are better at things, all of those things are counterproductive and they're a distraction. And I think they're a distraction that mostly benefits the people who currently hold power. Because while we get stuck in arguments about whether men are better or whether women are better, we also get stuck in arguments about whether it's nature or whether it's nurture and whether we shouldn't ever expect women to be as successful as men because of that. All of that is irrelevant. I think we should completely separate character from gender and then go, what characters do we value in society? Who is showing those characteristics? Can we learn to exhibit more of those characteristics and to value those characteristics and reward them so that those people get to contribute more to society? Because in the end, that should be what matters. What people, how people are and what we encourage them to be. And that's not fixed. You know, we can learn to behave in different ways. I myself learned to be very aggressive when I was being a mathematician. And since I left my tenured job, I have unlearned that behavior because I realized I didn't like it and it wasn't productive and it wasn't helpful to the people around me. And so I've spent the years since then relearning behavior so that I can learn to be more congressive even when the environment is still ingressive.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And, you know, I'm thinking again about that column that you wrote in the Wall Street Journal, where you were really beginning to describe all of this. I must say, I loved your application of mathematics to gender when you were looking specifically, say, for instance, at sports. There was a big highlighted piece of this that said average marathon times for men and women differ by about 30 minutes. We know this by looking at the world records. That sounds like a lot, but the fastest women run marathons twice as fast as the average men. And I must admit, the reason why I was laughing is because a dear friend of mine is Kathy Switzer, who was the first female. Well, actually, she snuck into the Boston Marathon, which, you know, women were not allowed to run.
Right.
Do you remember
amazing.
That?
Yeah. And, yes, I know that. Yeah, I read about that.
And Kathy snuck in there, put her hair up into a cap, because, as you know, it was a bit of a cold day that day. And thank heavens for that. But she had a ponytail. And she stuck it up in her cap, and she was running with her boyfriend at the time. And at some point, her ponytail popped out, and she was, as it were, discovered. But she kept running anyway, even though they tried to kick her out. And the joke is that if you look at her time, she ran in the first third of the pack, which is phenomenal for a woman, phenomenal. Which means that, let's just do a little math here, laughing with a mathematician, that means she beat out two-thirds of the men. All right? And so what does that say? Exactly what you said. Average, you know, but the fastest women run marathons twice as fast as the average men. It's exactly what you were talking about. And I loved how you use mathematics to really look at this whole issue of differences and ending all of this with, the differences may be interesting, but they are also very small. The differences within each gender are greater than the differences between genders. So gender is not a good predictor of these behaviors. Explain that.
That's right. So when we try and use one thing to predict another, when measuring one of them is easier than the other. And so, for example, when we weigh things, we often weigh things to find their mass in daily life, but we're not really taking their mass, we're taking their weight. And so pedantic people like to make that difference. But if we just staying on Earth, it doesn't make any difference, because you may remember that the relationship is fixed by gravity. And so unless we go to the moon or something, that relationship is very clear and fixed. And so taking one of them as a proxy for the other is not really that harmful. Whereas as things get more and more hazy, it's much less accurate to take one thing as a proxy for another. And so using gender to predict behavior is not very accurate, and I think that it's oppressive because it fixes people in stereotypes. Now, some people argue, and I received a few messages after that column, by people sort of desperately claiming that even if the differences are greater between genders, there's another theory saying that the tails are longer in the men's distribution, so that even if there's a big overlap in the distributions, that the standard deviation, which is the measure of how wide the distribution is, some people claim that that's bigger in men, and that's why there are more brilliant men, as well as, they claim, more really hopeless men. And the thing about all of those arguments is that they're still stuck in this one-dimensional gendered argument. And the thing is that what we're trying to measure here, if we're trying to measure mathematical ability, that is an extremely difficult thing to quantify. And it's not something that can just be measured or quantified by something simple like the kinds of tests that get done, things like multiple choice tests or times tables tests or speed tests. And so even if in those things men come out with more of them at the top and more of them at the bottom, that's still not a good predictor of actual mathematical ability. And I'd like to build on the marathon example, because there was so much stuff I couldn't fit in that column, but there's a fascinating extension of this, which is ultramarathon runners. Have you heard about the fact that recently women have been beating men at ultramarathons? And it's not clearly understood why this is a case, except that ultramarathons are a much more complicated event than just running. And it's not sheer physical strength anymore. I think nobody argues that men are the fastest sprinters over a short distance because of sheer physical power. Whereas ultramarathons are some combination of physical strength, stamina, planning, and psychology. And that's very much more complicated, and women seem to be doing better at that. So likewise, mathematical research is a very complicated combination of mathematics, creativity, having ideas, stamina, self-awareness, collaborative abilities, planning, being able to see, have visions into the future. The only things that we can really measure when we measure things like mathematical ability are really boring things like doing times tables. And so that's not a good predictor of mathematical ability either. And finally, even if there were a difference between men and women, that does not excuse our unequal treatment of them. Even if we are not expecting a parity of numbers in the end, we should still treat people fairly and value the abilities that are genuinely valuable.